You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
It's hour number two of the Internet Advisor Show, and that's the time for you to give us a call. That's right, when you've got a question about your computer, about getting online, getting around when you're online, dealing with email problems, whatever it may be, we'd love to get in there and help you solve those problems, and we've been doing that for nearly 20 years now. Gary Baker is with me, and so is Ed Rudell, and we're going to be doing our very best to answer your calls at 800-859-0957. And away we go on hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown, along with Ed Rudell and Mr. Gary Baker, who is with us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How you doing, Gary?
Somebody has to be here.
Yeah.
It is spring break, however, so it is a little crowded.
Oh.
Having a lot of fun in the sun here.
Oh, I'm glad you're... Gary's been
I'll
on
be
with
back,
us.
Nick.
Go ahead.
I'll be back tomorrow night just in time for the all the power to go back on, hopefully.
That's one way of dealing with the power outage. Go to Florida.
You know, speaking of which, I found the Android application that I installed 3 years ago on my phone, if not 4 years. DTE has an app called the DTE application. And with it, I could report power outages, which thankfully this year I did not have. So, you know, stop sneering at me because I know a lot of people did. But I was actually able to look at the outage map and find out the extent of the damage. Which
now,
was
how did that hang on when things got really bad?
Well, when it Wednesday, as you know, when the winds came through between 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock that day, Wednesday, I could not access DTE's outage map. Nor could I use the application and look at the outage map because they were all so overwhelmed. So a lot of people must know about either the application or the outage map.
Well, I bet it was happening too because you were at work at that time, weren't you?
Oh yeah.
A lot of people at work were wondering what's going on at home. Mm-hmm. And for instance, you live out in an area that often is hit by power outages.
Right. And that application almost looked like the map they use for war games. Purple blobs, yellow blobs, red blobs, showing the thousands or hundreds of people, and depending on the color, outages.
I think I just heard in our last newscast.
Still 200,000, yeah.
Yeah, that it was also an historic outage. That they don't think they've ever had this many people out before for DTE.
Yeah.
We've had windstorms before, but we've never one of this kind of magnitude.
Right.
Hey, by the way, folks, we are now into our hour number two, and that's the time when we open up our phone lines for you to call in with your questions about your computer, about getting around the Internet, about maybe your printer. You name it. The number is 800-859-0957. And we've got a producer standing by, Logan Standifer, who's our producer, is ready to give you a cheerful greeting and get you on the air. And remember, folks, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And we found last week we were back to answering questions. We love doing that kind of thing. And we hope that more and more as we get into the spring, we'll be going to be able to do more of that, taking time in the second hour to answer your questions. But get back on the horse. If you've had a question that's been sticking around for a while that you've needed to have answered, give us a call at 800-859-0957.
Now, yeah, remember we had a listener caller that asked us about, they wrote us an email about a problem they were experiencing in that, was it every time they were connecting to the internet or trying to write an email, they were basically having a problem where their computer or their email, it was unclear, was telling them that they're on an unsecure connection. Now,
right.
What that tells me, because it was very vague, is that if they were at home, that you may want to disconnect from your home wireless and then reconnect, because you might have a man in the middle type of Wi-Fi thing happening. Remember, if you're using Comcast or Infinity or Charter, when you connect to your home wireless, you should be able to put in your secure PIN to connect to your home wireless. Right. At that point, you do have a secure connection. If you ever try to do connect to the internet, you'll get a little pop-up bubble on your right-hand side of your Windows 10 or Windows 8 or 7 computer that says you're connected to a non-secure or open network.
Or if you're in a Mac, you can. I think it says you go over there and it says, "Show me, you know, the available Wi-Fi connections that are there."
Right,
and it'll show you everything that's available.
Right. So that's really the only suggestion I can give to the user. They said they already contacted. Now that I'm looking at the email, they contacted WOW, they contacted Microsoft, and each of them said that everything's all right. You know, without additional details, I'm not sure how I can help you, except for disconnecting your home wireless network and then reconnecting it, and then download something like Malwarebytes, the free version, and then scan your computer for malicious software just to make sure that you're not getting some fake, if you will, notifications.
Gary, where you are down in Fort Lauderdale, how are you connecting to the internet down there?
Well, I'm using cell data for some of it, and I'm using the Wi-Fi here at the marina for the rest. So we've been Skyping back and forth at the breaks, and that's through the Wi-Fi at the marina. But just to make sure that I don't get kicked off, because there's a lot of users down here today, I thought I'd go to the cell network.
I got you. Okay. So when you went to look for that Wi-Fi network, what are some of the things that are important to keep in mind when you're looking to connect? You're out someplace that's, let's say you're on vacation like Gary is, or you're, you know, outside of your home turf. What are some of the important things to look for, Gary, for you?
Well, I went to the Harbor Master and got the password.
Mm-hmm.
So,
gotcha.
Because so many of them, when they're private Wi-Fi like this, you know, you do need a password. They are secure just for their guests. But a lot of times, if people have Comcast, they're starting to put that mesh network in place, and I found four or five different places where I could just get on to Xfinity. Mm-hmm. And that was actually pretty decent till the kids woke up about midday and then
they got started again. Gary's calling us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it is spring break.
It's the end of spring break. Well, can you tell it's spring break?
And as you said, the kids woke up when the sun passed the yard arm.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is you just don't want to assume that you're connecting to the local wireless network that's offered by either a hotel. You know, go to the front desk and ask, or go to the people behind the counter and ask them, which of these wireless networks is yours? Because a lot of times it is possible that someone could set up a man-in-the-middle type of wireless network that you connect to that looks legit because it broadcasts the name of the business that you're at. And but they're actually, they could monitor every piece of information that passes through them to your whatever website or transactions you're trying to establish. So, and that's called the man of the middle.
I completely agree with that. That's why I did go to the Harbor Master and I got the Wi-Fi and the password, because I wanted to be safe.
That's exactly that. That's when you're...
I'm interested, Ed, in your perspective about Xfinity. I've also connected to Xfinity hoping that their security is no different than at my home. So,
well, we'll talk about that when we come back from our break here. By the way, folks, again, a reminder, 800-859-0957 is the phone number. We've got lines open, and shame on you if you don't get an answer to your question. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Thank you very much for being with us here on WJR. And this week, we have our phone lines open for your questions at 800-859-0957. And by the way, I want to tip the hat to Mike Stachowski. Stets, thanks so much for being instant in season and out of season. This gentleman has been doing a wonderful job of engineering for us and also doing a little producing. He has been here overnight and came back again to work. So, Mike, thanks so much for all you do for us here on WJR. And if you're calling in and you don't get an answer right away, hang on. We'll get to you as quick as we possibly can. And let's go to Charles, who's with us from East Point. Charles, welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor.
Thank you. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I'm trying to decide what to buy. I had a 17-inch gateway, and it crashed, and I want to buy a new one. QVC has one. But they have a preloaded program on there, Internet connection, which is a problem. I don't like that one. And do you think an investment in a 17-inch laptop is a dinosaur? Or they said they should get smaller computers or whatever. But what would you do if you prefer that type of viewing?
Okay, Charles, let me get let's get to your question again specifically.
Well, the thing is if it was me, I would buy a laptop. And I mean, you could buy for $250, you could buy yourself a 15-inch laptop for a little bit more, 17-inch. Yeah, you don't see too many manufacturers out there doing that because you have, monitors or LCD monitors are so cheap. So you said that you had a gateway computer for quite a while, and I imagine that was a desktop. Is that correct?
No, it was a laptop.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, so what do you feel like?
I enjoy the ability of the – I don't do too much movies, but somehow I think the 17 inches, the clarity and the viewability is a lot better. I don't have a – but having a smaller one I think I'm losing something, but evidently it's just something I got fixated on, a 17-inch.
I should get older. I will say this, as you get older, we just recently invested in a 39-inch TV, and we hadn't had anything that big in a long time. It's a wonderful experience to be able to see it clearly. And as a matter of fact, at one point I said, good grief, Ginny, we can see the texture of the skin on the face. It's
right.
In some cases, some starlets are not happy with that. But
yeah, I mean, it's really a matter of going to the store and seeing if you can live with it.
Yes.
And instead of trying to get it online or something, is it possible for you to visit a store and just to hands-on and look at the 13 inches, 15s, and 17s?
There's a place that called Micro, and they say they have everything. Is that a good
choice? Micro Center, exactly. Micro Center is a store that's on the 14 Mile, right at I-75. But you're also, I think, you're in East Point, aren't you?
Yes.
There's a Best Buy in East Point. In addition to Best Buy, you've got, and they have got a ton of computers.
And it's not a matter of going there to purchase it. You want to see if you can live with the interface.
Ed's made probably the really important point, and Gary, I know that you've said this before too. Get out there in the store and get your hands on the computer, get your eyes on the monitor, because they can try to sell you all sorts of stuff. But once you see it, and like a keyboard, how does the keyboard feel? Does it really feel good to you? Those are the kind of questions.
Yeah, and you know what? I transitioned to, I picked up a 17-inch laptop just a couple days ago, and the keyboard layout on those is almost like a standard keyboard. It actually took me a little bit of time for my fingers to get used to that, the larger keyboard format of a 17-inch keyboard on a laptop, because I was stumbling and I was having difficulty typing, put it that way.
Does that help you, Charles?
Yeah, and the only other thing is the newer ones have a touch screen there. Is it worthwhile getting that?
Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I would say so too. Yes, because especially with the Windows environment,
it's going to cost you a couple 10. Hundred bucks extra.
No, it only costs about $100.
No, it won't. In fact, it's starting to get cheaper.
Yeah. Oh, really?
They're building way more and more of them.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
All right,
so
thank you very much.
I would absolutely agree.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, so Gary, you have a Surface, and it's a tablet version of a Windows tablet, if you will, with there's nothing like using the keyboard and the mouse. But every once in a while, I want to grab a website and I'll just touch it and sweep it up, and to have that ability.
I really like that. Ginny has a little HP that we got over at Shane Hamlin's shop in Sterling Heights, and I love working with the touchscreen on that.
Right.
And then I'll go back to my Mac and can't do it.
Yeah, and you can't. Fortunately, I think, shops like Shane's, and I bought my last two for my kids, I bought them both at Best Buy because it was cheaper than buying them online. And if I ever had a problem, I could take them back. And it made it really easy. They gave me a new one immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a friend who said, "Can you come help me?" And I said, "It's pretty easy, but sure, I'll come help you." And we went to Best Buy. We compared online. They looked at it and said, "I'll tell you what, here's another one that is a slightly better. We'll give it to you at the same price as the online price. And it's a slightly better machine."
Wow.
And he got it home, and it was a name brand. He got it home and he had trouble with the keyboard. He took it right back. They gave him, so they actually, this was a scratched one that they buffed out. So he got a way better machine than he could have bought online. It was a scratch and dent because there was a problem with the keyboard that they turned around and gave him a brand new one.
And not bad.
Just exchanged it.
And then he went to buy a lottery ticket afterwards.
I will tell you, I said, why can't that happen to me? But they will take care of you. You can't get everything at Best Buy that's better than online pricing. But for most of us, if you can't find something like that's acceptable, and sometimes better than acceptable for the same price as online at Best Buy, then just go back the next week and they'll probably have it.
Yeah, we should say that there are other major stores like Walmart and Target and Myers. Am I right? Myers has, I think, some audio video as well. You can go to one of those places as well. They don't have quite the selection you will find at a Best Buy, but
knowledgeable people.
Yeah, exactly.
But or the Micro Center, I've had good luck there, and obviously we've all had good luck with Shane. So.
Yep, exactly. All right, let's go to John from Wixom. John, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi, guys. How are you this afternoon?
Good.
My internet is provided through my cable company.
Yeah.
And we've contemplated changing to another company, but our issue is we've been with the cable company for our internet service for 14 years, and there are literally hundreds of people and organizations that have our email addresses that cable company's IP address. And if we go to change, is there any structure or any way that we can contact people or provide that the emails get forwarded to us?
Oh, so your concern is I change carriers, will my email be forwarded? Will people that I deal with know that I'm...
No. He wants to keep the email addresses, and you have to contact your current internet provider.
I don't necessarily want to keep my email address, but I want all the people that have current email address.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought. We'll come right back to you
after this commercial, because Foster's done this a number of times to me.
Wait, we're going to be... We'll be back with some answers for you here on the Internet Advisor. Our number again, 800-859-0957. Thanks once again so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And Mike Stett, thanks so much for being with us. And also, Logan Standifer, thank you for being our hostess as you answer the phone lines there. Gary Baker in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with us on the phone line. Gary, good to have you there.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Ed Riddell.
It's great to be here, actually.
Yeah, I bet it is. A whole lot better than it is to be here in the merry state of Michigan. We're talking with, we have John with us from Wixom. John, welcome to the Internet Advisor again.
Hi, guys.
Okay, so your concern, let me see if I can recap it, was that you're about to change internet service providers. You have hundreds of people who have your email address from that provider. What happens when you switch providers and get a new email address, right?
Yeah, exactly, because right now we're held captive. We're afraid to move.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we've done in the past is we've migrated, if you got like a Gmail account, and
that's
then you can
I've
use
done.
That as your aggregate to suck in all the addresses.
That's what I've done in the past.
Okay, and then you would... And then you would, your current internet provider's email address would feed into it, and your future one. So for you, the change would be minimal because you've, your interface would be the same. But your concern is you're probably going to blast out an email to all these people and say, hey, my email address may change in the near future. This is it. And you only have 30 days, you know, and, but some people may ignore that and you may lose that contact, or they may not update their contact information a year down the road, and that's what you're concerned
about.
And that's
just that hiccup in the system or the process.
A lot of people go through this, and usually you could pay the internet provider to. And now, Gary, please help me with this. There is the ability for them to auto forward an email address. They ain't going to do it for free, though. It's not to their benefit to do that for free, and because they want to keep your business. As their internet provider. So it's now what you need to do is contact them and find out if it's available for them to set up an auto reply message with your new email address, and then if you could pay them for that, you know, and how much would that be? Is that $5 a month for a year? You know,
Well, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, the other thing that you might try is if you're thinking about moving, get a Gmail account today. And start telling people, use a Gmail account.
Yeah.
And then don't get rid of Comcast. Don't get rid of your cable company until you're pretty sure that you caught 90-some percent of everybody now using your new email.
I know I get teased unmercifully by Gary and Ed about the fact, and Cal, I have so many different email addresses. Part of it has been that when I have been with a different provider, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to make my email address now, Foster Brown at Huawei or Comcast or whatever, and they'll offer me that free. I've simply made, you know, I have a Hotmail account, which I use for dealing with most of my, you know, junk mail kind of stuff. And there's a Gmail account that I have for, you know, more personal kind of stuff.
Well, there's a Yahoo and a BizNet and a...
You're right. There are those as well.
Gosh, yes.
But...
Yeah, well, and Foster, you've only given me the Hotmail account, the junk mail account. You've never given me the Gmail one.
Well, that's right. I'm holding that for very special family members.
I see. All right. I know where I rate.
The concept is that instead of playing the Russian roulette with the, you know, the providers and the email addresses that they offer you, go to one of the free ones, and they're very good, you know, whether it's Gmail or Yahoo, or I would stay away from Yahoo because some of the problems that they're having.
Yeah, or Hotmail. But, you know, most of them are taking care of the problem. So most of the online webmail service providers, what's nice about them is they also offer two-factor authentication, for most of our listeners out there, if you have not done this in a while, go to your Gmail account and or your Hotmail account and then start checking into the security portion of it so that you can enable your two-factor authentication.
All right, John, those are some ideas
for the information. I've got the picture. It's sort of what I expected. And we did set up Gmail accounts, but our biggest issue is like with charities and foundations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't hear from them for a year.
Yeah, right.
And I guess it's a matter of just going back through all our records of 14 years. And I think we probably saved about 14 years. We use a lot of memory, so matter of going back through them and finding everybody. And,
all right, John.
Let them know we're thinking about changing.
All right,
okay,
sir.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the information.
Thank you very much for being with us. And don't forget
the option that you can always pay your internet provider to have an auto reply.
That's a good, you know, that's a good point.
You should
too.
Be able to do that. Try that.
Check it out.
It might be worth the money. Instead of paying an intern to look through all those email addresses and contact information, find out what your internet service provider will charge you for an auto reply.
Be interesting to see. I'll have to look that up online. Okay, let's go to James from Detroit. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. And by the way, our number here, 800-859-0957, and lines are open. Hi, James.
Hi, is this Foster?
Yes, sir, it is.
Also, I've been listening to you for years. In fact, you introduced me to Malwarebytes.
Oh, excellent. Excellent software.
Super anti-spyware that came advertised on that spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I'm really interested in is a good printer that might download the software and the drives without a whole lot of work. I've had about 6 printers in the last 8-9 years,
uh-huh.
and none of them lasted more than a couple of years.
Yeah.
Best Buy tells me that they're junk. They make them very cheaply. I don't know if it's here or China. But they say, we don't even work on them. We simply...
Yep, that's true.
Yep.
If I can go to a Best Buy or one of the big boxes and spend, well, this last one a couple months ago, I went to, where was it? Walmart. And they happen to have a very good deal, $75 for an HP.
Well, that might be the problem. I mean, you're spending $75, but you got to spend $66 to refill the ink.
Oh, that and then Epson comes up with, now here, Epson has come up with a solution, James, which is kind of an interesting one, where they charge you more. It's, I think, $300 some odd
for
that.
But they offer the Eco Tank.
It's called the Eco Tank, yeah. And what are the, how much?
You say Echo, I say Eco.
how much?
You know, I don't know. Well, it'll last for, what was it? What did they advertise? 10,000 pages?
Yeah. It's huge.
But it is an inkjet one.
Yes.
So here's, now, the printers that you're having difficulty with in the last 7 years, have they been inkjet or laser?
Well, the last two were lasers. Beautiful, beautiful ink jobs.
Yes.
But I have to search through the internet to get the software downloaded. The discs never work. You try them 4 or 5 times, they still don't work. So you go to supporters online, and you finally get the software, and then after a day or so, you lose control. They don't follow your instructions at all. These were $400 and $500 laser jets.
Just out of curiosity, what was the manufacturing name?
HP.
Yeah, really?
That surprises me. Surprises me.
HP 477 FNW and FDN, laser jets. They don't work worth squat.
Yeah. It sounds like, James, you might need to do a good deal of research online for reviews.
Yeah. But the problem is that the drivers are always the issue, and what HP has gone to is a model where they provide universal print drivers.
Print drivers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And which sounds great, but because they universally support so many of their printers, like if I was to look for some of my printers, I want something specific for my printer. No, that model doesn't work. What they've done is created a universal print driver, and they now manufacture the printer language of all the printers to match those drivers. But sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, the way it should.
Well, do you think that $500 unit that's only, they were manufactured in 2015, you'd think they'd have the latest software and the latest drivers.
Yeah, you would think.
James, I've kind of flipped this thing on its head. Rather than paying a ton of money and believing that I'm getting the best best printer because I paid $500 for it, I am now going the opposite direction. I'm paying $75 for it and thinking maybe it's a throwaway. Yeah.
I mean, until most, because I paid $400 for a beautiful Samsung color laser, and wouldn't you know it, and it was beautiful, and I loved it. But as soon as I had to replace those cartridges, I realized how cheaply they were made and how they spewed color toner all over the place inside the unit. My unit was unusable at that point.
After
the first year, and it was past warranty. So but I, like you said, I loved the printer. It was easy to use. It printed. Now, I was experienced poor design with toners, or either that or Ed Rudell is a little too aggressive pulling cartridges out, which is entirely possible.
So, James,
you're right. I flipped it on the head, and I bought myself a cheap HP printer.
Exactly. I would just reverse the paradigm, James, and go for something that maybe costs less overall, but then...
Well, it really depends if he's a photographer or not.
Would you really prefer to get a better... suggest that you get a better job if it's wireless, Wi-Fi, or if it's...
hold that thought.
Yeah, hang on, James. We'll come back and see if we can handle that. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. And once again, thanks to Logan Stadifer, our producer, and to Mike Stett, who is our engineer, the people behind the glass who make the program possible. And let's go back to James, just kind of quickly. Let's go back. And you were asking a question, extending your question about a printer. And I've got a couple other people I want to try to get to kind of quickly as well, from Lynn from Ohio and Ben from Adrian.
Okay. Won't hold you very much longer, Foster. Just a quick question. Have you had better luck using a Wi-Fi system, an Ethernet system, or the other connection. I can't think of the proper name.
Oh, Bluetooth?
No, not Bluetooth.
USB? The USB connections?
USB, yes.
Yeah, okay. Gary, how about your thoughts?
Nope, we may have lost him again. There he is.
No, can you hear me now?
Now yeah. I can hear you, yeah.
All right. Ethernet is going to be your most reliable. It's wired. However, I use wireless without a problem. You know, I do assign a static IP address to the printer. And we talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. That's something that's, you know, important to do if you were to lose power to the router. Because it otherwise would dynamically assign those IP addresses and can potentially be a problem. Okay. Ed, your thoughts on that?
Well, most manufacturers now, they put a piece of sniffer software included in their software driver for the printer. As an example, every time if I had an HP and I use the HP wizard to attach to my wireless printer, every time my computer off, every time I power up my computer, it sniffs out to see if the printer's there, and then it then dynamically assigns the IP address to it. So you really don't have to do dynamic, if you will. You don't have to statically define your printer anymore, because every time you power up your computer, it'll find the printer, you know, and then give it the address. You know, I still do that. I still statically set an IP address on mine, but that's old school. You really don't need to do that.
So is this... does this work on every printer then?
Well, it does on HPs.
Like I have, HPs. But do I have an older HP? Can I do this with an older HP?
Well, it depends on how old. They've been doing this for about any DeskJet printer, or any laser printer that came wireless in the last 4 years. They've been doing this.
I'm doing
also,
this.
One quick question, and you can discuss.
yeah, James, go ahead.
One quick question, you can discuss it after you hang up on with me. What do you fellas think about Fix Me Stick? Is it, they sell it at Best Buy, sell it at other computer stores. Is it a panacea, or is it better than any other?
Well, the Fix Me Stick, I've seen YouTube videos on it, and basically it is a bootable stick which then scans your computer for viruses and malicious software. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't actually tried it. We tried something a couple years ago. I don't know if it was called Fix Me, but at the time it was very rudimentary.
Yep.
So I really don't know that much about them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They sell them at Best Buy, sell them at other computer places, and I just wondered how.
Well, James, you know what? I'll make a point of looking through it. I'll look for some reviews on it and see if we can get some.
Yeah, because what I use is the Microsoft Windows bootable flash drive, you know, with that for the installation, and I tell it to repair my computer.
Yep, and that's essentially what you're doing. James, thanks so much again for being with us. All right, let's go to Lynn, who is with us from Ohio. Lynn, thanks for your patience, and welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Well, I'd just like to ask a few questions about Windows 10. What about their passwords? Does Windows 10 have administrator and standard accounts? You can put a separate password on each one?
Yes, if you wanted to, yes. You can,
okay.
On my computer, when it came up, I logged in and it gave me elevated privileges, and I log into my Microsoft Outlook account, if you will. So it's the same email address, the same username and password that I use to log onto my PC is the same as my Outlook. And then I made sure that I also enabled an administrator account on there and set a password for it as well.
Oh, as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, by default, so I knew I had an administrator account. By default, I don't believe it actually had the administrative account on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought initially
but that
was
a year
default.
And a half ago or more. It's been a while. But that's a great question. Is that what you were pretty much asking?
Yes, I have a Windows 7 right about now. It's Home Premium, and I'm thinking about eventually, I'll probably have to eventually go to Windows 10. And also, what is your opinion on using a VPN on wireless Wi-Fi networks?
That's fine. I use VPN all the time for work. And then, you know, and I haven't brought this up, but yeah, you could subscribe to VPN. On your home network, so any network traffic you're doing, it's encrypted between your PC and the VPN servers that you're subscribing to, or the free ones if you're getting a free VPN server, so that you know that all the data is
it's like a tunnel.
It's a tunnel, and it's encrypted, and no one can actually breach that information. Once it's on the other side of that VPN server, though, you know, it's no holds bar at that point. But you know,
Between you and the VPN server,
you and the wireless and your home wireless servers and anywhere on the internet, it's encrypted. And I was going to mention this is Opera, which is a web browser most people that we haven't heard that much from recently. But 6 months ago or 4 months ago, they released a new version of Opera, which by you can enable VPN by default. So they give you VPN. So any site that you travel to, if you use the Opera server, it's encrypted from your PC to the through Opera to the server on the far end.
Wow.
And so I've experimented with it. I don't use it that much.
You use it, I would imagine, in business situations, right?
Well, anytime I need to access my corporate network, in order for me to connect to my work network, yes, I have to activate the VPN.
Gary, is that how you use it as well?
No, I just use a VPN. It's a Hotspot Shield.
Hotspot Shield?
Yes.
And that is the VPN software you're using?
Yes, I'm using the Elite Edition. It's a paid edition.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. So,
but it's a paid VPN. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Well, you got a free version. It'll bug you with that, but they got the paid version, too. Mm-hmm. And you can get multiple countries you can go through, not just the United States.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people do that. Like, I caught my daughter doing that when she wanted to watch the BBC.
BBC.
There was some television, and this was years ago when it wasn't as easy to watch BBC on the internet as it is now. But in order for her to do that, she had to find a VPN server that was in Great Britain, and then she could actually watch stream the BBC programs that she wanted to watch.
Right.
Because if we tried that in the United States, it says, I'm sorry, you're not in our country. We're not going to stream BBC to you, you know.
Yeah.
So
the reverse of that is used by a lot of foreign countries as well to get into, you know, like Netflix and Amazon and things like that in the United States. Okay, Maya, Lynn, is that what you were asking for? Okay, sir. Thank you so much for giving us a call.
Right.
Let's go to, hey, Ben is with us here. Hi, Ben from Adrian. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Foster?
Very well, my friend. This is Gentleman Ben the Farmer. How are you?
I'm doing good.
What can we do for you?
I want to comment on that fellow that was wondering about changing ISPs.
Oh, yes.
When I done it, my old ISP allowed me to have a paid email address for however long I wanted to do it. And I use a client on my computer so I could have more than one email address to contact, and I left that one on there until I quit getting messages from it and was getting most of the messages on the new email address.
You know, that's a great point.
Very
so instead
point,
of having it so that it automatically sends the person a message, you're actually just paid for the email, not the internet service, and you pay to it until you stop receiving email. That's a great solution.
Yeah, and some of the people that's on your address book, you haven't contacted, or they haven't contacted you in a long time, so it doesn't make any difference if someone would get lost.
That's a great point. Time to weed them out.
Ben, we got to run. Thank you so much for being with us, though.
Okay.
Take care. That's Ben from Adrian. Appreciate his being with us. Doug, hang on a second. We'll be with you. I'm going to take you afterwards on the call when we finish the program. And I want to thank Gary Baker down in Fort Lauderdale for being with us. Gary, thanks so much.
My pleasure. I'll be back in the studio next week.
Look for you then, Ed. Look for you back here next week as well.